To do on lesson 19, I guess the last sentence or two, and then we'll get into lesson 20. I'm sure we'll be there for a little while.
Is this getting away?
Yeah. Shouldn't have said too much about that.
Church rates are real high.
Okay, I guess we've only got two chapters left, personally, marker here. So, okay, I guess we're good. I guess we really did. We got that last night. Okay, well, we're at the middle, the very middle of the line, on the second line up from the bottom, mm-hmm. where it starts with Almar. I think that's where we left off, isn't that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, who was last? Does anybody remember yesterday?
I think it's I would have been my first.
Okay, Daniel. Okay, good. Thanks. A good memory. I'm going to have more of a stake in it than I do.
The only reason I remember is because of the pony with you.
Yeah. Yeah, we wait for Doug and have him do it. Oh, go ahead, Daniel. We'll spare Doug today.
Amar Yahweh el Hanachash ki asita to arut ata mikol הבהמה ומכל החיה השדה.
Okay, good.
Yahweh said to the serpent, because you did this, you are more accursed than all the beasts and all the animals of the field, or you are accursed above all the animals.
Right. Okay, good. Yes, Yahweh said to the serpent, because you have done this, or this thing, or whatever, because you've done this, accursed are you. You are more cursed. Accursed are you more than all the beasts, or you are more accursed than all the beasts and all the creatures of the field, you know, animals of the field, or living things of the field. Mm-hmm. Okay, and actually, I guess they used a singular, both of you, didn't they? This is, again, that problem with collective versus, if you wanted to say, you could say more than every, you get a little awkward in English, but more than every beast and every living thing of the field, which is the singular. They use the singular. Too tough because these collectives are almost like plurals, and so you end up translating all the beasts and all the creatures of the field. So I would accept either one. It's technically behemoth, it's technically singular, and chayot is technically singular. So you want to be super literal, to be more like more than each beast and each living thing of the field. The sense really doesn't make it. Okay, last sentence there, Eric, starting with Yasaru.
Yasaru ha-adam vu ha-isha min ha-gan ki ha-tu
ha-tu
ha-tu ha-tu la-yave el-ti.
Right.
The man and the woman went out from the garden, for they had sinned, sin against the Lord God.
Yes. The man and the woman went out from the garden because they had sinned the sin against the Lord God, or Yahweh Elohim. Translated. Okay, questions? Dan?
Shall come in. It was interesting to me that it says to the serpent, you are more cursed than all the animals.
Uh-huh.
Which implies that the other animals are cursed too.
Yes, right.
The serpent more.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You're more cursed than the other animals. Of course, he's anticipating the curse in the whole thing. And this one may be the worst of it. That's a good point. Notice the redundancy in sin to sin also. But that's, it's not uncommon for Hebrews to do that.
Is it
sin to sin, or is it, you know, this dream to dream?
Do they ever say he sinned?
Oh, yeah, you can say he sinned without adding it, right? But it's more emphatic if you do. In other words, they're doing a lot
if they say he sinned against somebody, is it frequently or always sin to sin against?
No, you may just be sinned against without sin to sin. It may just be he sinned against so and so.
So it is for him?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Same with dream. You can dream, or you can dream a dream. You know?
Right.
So, and there'll be another usage later on that's somewhat analogous to this in terms of emphasis, where you use an infinitive absolute and you use a finite verb form and then you use infinitive right following it. And, they get the idea of something like dreaming he dreams or something, you know, it's real, a lot of emphasis on the continuing idea or real focus on it. So it's very interesting. But we'll have to wait for it. Kind of absolute.
This one is the dying you shall die.
Right, dying you shall die, right. Exactly. Same thing. So in other words, you're really...
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it's very certain. That's a certainty to it. You can almost sense an emotional, you know, it's not enough just to say it. They've got to put more to it, you know. It's a very emotional language in that respect, as far as expression is concerned. A lot of emotive expression.
So, on the sense here, it's that they sin the sin.
Uh-huh.
There's articles on there.
No, this is just sin, a sin, because kata. Yeah, it's no article. That's the shape, the first letter. Yeah, they sinned the sin against Yahweh. You don't need an F, no, because you would if it was articular. Yeah, if it was articular.
So they really want to drive it home. They sinned the sin.
Mm-hmm. That would be possible, too. They sinned the sin. Usually, probably that one didn't focus on a particular sin that they had in mind, you know. Or if they didn't have anything in mind, it would just be drawing the sin of sins, you know, it'd be probably, you know, you'd have to look at the context to kind of decide what that meant, but it could have the idea of just breaking the first commandment, you know, or something of that nature, or idolatry or something, I don't know. It kind of depends on what the context was.
Another question
that
brought up, the very last time in the sentence, third line from the bottom.
Okay. Third line from the bottom. Okay, gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Would he?
Mm-hmm. since the verb already has the pronoun.
Right. Yes, there is an emphasis, but this would probably be not as strong an emphasis as there was another place where Adam was talking and said, she gave it to me to eat. That's a little bit more emphatic in one respect. This is because you changed persons now, and different persons talking, and she said to him. Oftentimes they'll do this just to make it clear which direction the conversation is going. So I would suggest that that's probably what the emphasis is here.
Because I didn't think there was much reason to emphasize
right
at that point.
Yeah. There's emphasis, but it's a different kind. It's not emphasis so much an intonation stress, but it's just making a clarification as to we've got a change of persons now. You know.
Could you look at that named Cafe? He is
yet. It could, under some circumstances, if there was a feminine noun that was in it, the nakash would be masculine, so that the, in other words, if it was a beast, for example, behema, then if the beast were talking or something, then it conceivably could refer to the beast, and be he, being feminine noun, and be translated it. But here, I think your context yourself is referring back to the isha, the woman, so we translate she.
Is there a way that you can't both? I guess I can translate this. She spoke to the servant.
Oh, no.
Everything.
No, that wouldn't be.
She spoke to the lawyer where it was sitting there.
No, that would make that would make he the direct object now. She spoke it. It she spoke. She spoke. Yeah, that would make that the direct object rather than the subject. And,
different structure.
Yeah, it'd be a different structure. Let me try to think if you ever see that. I don't know if it would ever be constructed that way, but it'd probably have an S on before he.
I was thinking you might emphasize what she's saying instead of emphasizing her.
Uh-huh. Right. Well, they probably could do that, but they'd set it up differently. It'd be a different structure. Okay. All right, well, lesson 20. This is probably the hardest single lesson in the book, I would guess. At least it was for me. For you, it may not be. Maybe it won't. I hope it won't be. But it's just a matter of putting together some things we've already had. There's nothing fundamentally new. We've already had the ending. We've already had reductions. So now it's just a matter of putting all that stuff together. So the knowledge of constructs and the knowledge of how to form plurals, the knowledge of pronominal suffixes on prepositions is all being combined in this chapter to talk about suffixes being attached to nouns. So we looked at this first example real quickly. We'll go through it again here. In section 85, pronominal possession, such as my book, his king, where this is pronominal, it's not his possession. Normal possession is done with a construct relationship if it's nominal thing. But if it's pronominal, where one of the things is a pronoun, then you are going to do it this way. My book, his king, etc. is indicated in Hebrew by suffixation of the pronominal element. The forms of the pronoun attached to the singular noun are more or less the same as those used with the prepositions already studied. The major difficulty lies, as usual, in the alterations of the nominal stem rather than in the ending. Here is the paradigm of sus, the stem of which remains unchanged throughout. Now, if all words in Hebrew were like sus, this would be very much an easier job. It would be a matter of memorizing the ending. So with sus, we see susi, susaka, susake, suso, susa, susenu, susakem, susakin, and susam and susan. Now, these are just very much like the suffixes on the preposition, except that, I guess I'll wait to read the footnotes here. I'm just going to cover the differences. Special notes should be made of the following points. Number one, the second person feminine singular and the first person common plural always have seri. Recall that the prepositions are mixed in this regard with tathak, or kumikamas in some cases, and seri in others. So, point is, with your preposition date, for example, way back there, when the first one we had, you had, instead of Zenu, it was Banu. It was Banu. Here it's Zenu. Got Sari instead of Anu instead of Anu. And same with the second person feminine singular, Susake instead of Susak, like Bach was before. So that's a major difference, I guess. Now, others though, you had like Mimake, that had the Sari in it. But of course, that Min was kind of a strange animal too, it looked kind of differently. So it's like that in that respect. But one thing is they're consistent. You know? In other words, on nouns now, they're always going to be Sari. It's never going to be sometimes Sari and sometimes commas. But with prepositions, it was not commas. Okay. So you may want to... Does somebody know the page of that first paradigm just so you can look at the difference maybe? Yeah, the preposition base was... Okay, yeah. I guess it was Lama that gave it. Yeah, okay. Yeah, page 31. Lesson 7, page 31. Yeah, there it was. So it was Li, Laka, Lak, it was common. And then Lo, La, Lanu, instead of Anu, was Anu. So that's where your differences are. Anu and Lak, Ak on the preposition, but Anu and Ak on the suffixes on noun. Okay, then the second point may not be too obvious right at the start, but once you look at the next paragraph, you'll see the reason for saying it. Point number two. The shawa of susaka should be thought of as properly part of the suffix sus plus eka, and not part of the noun stem. In other words, that shawa is always going to be a vocal shawa. It's always going to be part of the suffix. It's never going to close the syllable. That's what they're trying to tell you. Is that see a shawa can sometimes be be open or closed. It can be silent. I mean silent or vocal. And if the with sus there's no problem because you had an unchangeable long vowel before it. But so it would have to be vocal. But suppose you had a word that had a suppose there was a comma on there, and then you had the syllable before that shawa could be either considered vocal or silent, depending whether the shawa and the commas would either be commas patuf or full commas. And so what they're telling you is that the shwa is always vocal, regardless of what's gone before it. And it considered a part of the ending. Consider the shwa part of the ending, so it'll be fixed, it'll be invariable. And so it's always going to be a vocal shwa, which means that regardless of what's before, it'll be a vocal shwa, which means that sometimes you're going to see methods of the thing before it, because on a comment, for example, and that's what you'll see in this next paradigm, because the methods going to be there to show you that that's comments, not comments, not food. Which you might think it is otherwise. Okay, and that tells you you got to pronounce that shawa vocally. All right, now on the contrary, the shawa of susakhem and susakhem should be taken as part of the noun stem, susa plus hem. The reason for this apparent arbitrary distinction will become clear below. The reason is that sometimes this shawa is going to be silent, sometimes it's going to be vocal. It's going to depend on the nature of the vowel before that, whether it's a short vowel or a long vowel. And so some words are going to have silent schwa there on that suffix, and some are going to have vocal schwa. That's why he said it's better to think of it as part of the stem, because if it's on the stem, it can vary. If it's on an ending, you usually try to think of those as fixed and never varying. So if you think of it as part of the stem, think of it as possible this might vary because depending on what the rest of my stem is, the schwa might be vocal or silent. That'll keep you in track there. So this one might be either vocal or silent, depending on the stem. Now with sus, since your vowel just before it is an unchangeable long vowel, it's going to be open. It's going to be an open syllable, so it'll be vocal schwa. But let's look at this next example with davar. Look at the same suffixes on a noun like davar. Now you'll see the reason for the distinction here. With davar, we have proprietonic reduction here, just like we did with the plurals. For example, when you added im, what was the plural for davar? Gimarim, yeah, with shua the first syllable. That open comments reduced to shua, proprietonic reduction. Well, the same thing happens with these pronominal suffixes because they, like the plural ending im, draw the accent. And then you've added a syllable that's got the accent. When you do that, those are the conditions under which proprietonic reduction takes place. So you can think of that just the same as you do with plurals. So We've got Devari and Devaraka. And what we see there, though, is that the Shua there is going to be vocal, Devaraka, because it's part of the suffix. It will always be vocal. That's why they had to put the Metheg in there, to show you that that is a full kamas, in spite of the fact there's a Shua following it. Otherwise, you might think that was kamas patu from the syllable was closed and pronounced it Devorka. See? But it's not Devorka, it's Devaraka. Okay. So they put the Metheg in there to show that. And then the Divarek, Divaro, Divara, same endings here. Divarenu, Divarkem, and Divarken. Why do I pronounce that with a silent schwa, whereas with Susa I pronounce it with a vocal schwa?
Short.
Yeah, we've got a papa, short syllable, short vowel, there's going to be a closed syllable with schwa following it. And so you consider that schwa part of the stem, so it'll just follow normal rules in that respect. So it will be short. A short syllable, so it'll be closed, and that's Shua will be silent. So it's Divarkem. That's the reason for making this rule down here, is so that you'll know what to do on these. You'll always have vocal Shua on that second person masculine singular, but you'll have either a vocal or a silent on the second person plural forms. Okay, and then Divaram. That's no problem. Yeah.
There's something I'm sure that on the second point here, that the Shua is supposed to be the beginning of the suffix.
Yes.
When we divide it up syllables, if I understood right, we're always supposed to begin with that consonant.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really as regarded as a syllable.
Right. No, they're just saying that the syllable would actually begin with a consonant that was above that schwa. You know, they're just saying to treat this thing as if what they're really, in essence, saying is the schwa is invariable. It's best to consider it as a fixed part of the ending, and regardless of the particular consonant that begins the syllable, that consonant will have to be there to actually do the syllable breakdown. But consider that ending part as including that schwa, so you'll know that it never varies. But of course, if you did a syllable analysis on this, the schwa can't constitute a syllable, vocal or otherwise, unless there's a consonant there somewhere. Now it might, you know, if a guttural was there, you could have katef, bata form, and have a syllable. But it would, in this particular example, it would be reish schwa would be that syllable. But the schwa is always a vocal schwa. There.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right as far as technically the way we divide the syllables, you have to have a consonant and followed by a vowel to the syllable. Okay, any other questions on that?
Okay, so now on the second person plurals over there.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, there is a devar, it's silent because of the pata.
Right.
But how do we know that there's going to be a pata?
Oh, and not a schwa there? I mean, not a. You notice all the other ones had commas.
Mm-hmm.
And these uh-huh. could take off. That's coming up in the next paragraph. There's a reason for it. These are what we call heavy suffixes because they begin with a consonant. Tem and ten, they are the only two consonants that begin, the only two of these endings that begin with a consonant. And because of that, they're called heavy suffixes, and they result in double reduction. So you in effect, what you're doing is you're getting the same stem as the construct had. Remember, in the construct form would have had papak here too, because that comments on accented comments would have shortened in papak. So that's basically it. Well, I'm getting ahead of the story here, though. But let's look at this next paragraph, see if we can ferret the details out here. But it's good that you observe the difference there. Why should there be a pasak there when there was a comma before? Okay, the shift of the stress from the noun stem to the suffix has produced the same kind of reduction we encountered in the plural and construct forms, namely commas and seri and propretonic, two before the main stress open syllables is replaced by schwa. The second person forms are the only ones that require comment. As suggested above, the schwa of eka, the singular form, is taken as a part of the suffix. This leaves the final stem syllable open, divar ka, noun sin before this suffix will accordingly have in most cases the same form as the first person, the first person singular. So it'll have the same stem as the one just above it, in other words, in the paradigm. The endings of the second person plural, however, are ten and ten, without schwa. the final syllable of the noun stem is closed, so it's devar chem. And the vowel, if possible, is shortened. So in this case, it is possible, so you do shorten it to papa. The noun stem before these two suffixes is most often identical to the construct form. To understand the stem changes, then, the suffixes must be considered of two kinds. Number one, those beginning with a consonant, often called heavy, chem and ten. And two, those beginning with a vowel, all the rest, are called light. So some are called heavy and some are called light. And that's the way you decide whether you're going to get the construct form of the stem or otherwise. So it's just the second person plurals, masculine and feminine, that have the heavy suffixes, and they're the ones where you're going to get a double reduction, you might say. In other words, the stem is reduced further beyond that proprotonic reduction, if it can be. Now, if it's a whole and wow or something, you can't reduce it anyway. And the same thing was true with the construct. In the construct, something that had a whole and wow in the last syllable was going to be the same construct as it was in the absolute. But you just follow those basic construct rules on these, with the double, with the heavy suffix. So, and that's something we really haven't encountered before, or nor would we really be able to predict. It's just, I think the philosophy is, the idea is that the syllable's closed, and you seldom have, it's really anomalous to have a comment in a closed syllable, unless it's comment statu, you know, a full comment. And so, it shortens the papa. So you get the syllable closed. Because you're starting another syllable with ten, you see, you want to close the previous syllable. That's the basic idea. But regardless of whether you understand the rule or not, just memorize what the forms do. All right, I guess. But just remember that chem and chem, those two heavy suffixes, are going to take the construct form of the base. So you get all the reduction you can possibly get. Okay, any questions there? All right. Now, of course, if there were anything other than a comment there, a theory might reduce the patak. Also, some cases you might have, well, I guess not in that situation. I guess I don't have to worry about that. I won't mention it. All right. That'll come up in the next section here. Feminine nouns in ah have ah before the light suffixes and ah before the heavy suffixes. What's the difference? One's got commas, one's got patak. Now, this makes them look very much like a construct, then. Getting that off ending. Remember, that's what happens in feminine nouns anyway, the construct. So before the suffixes, they're going to look kind of like constructs, except that the heavy suffixes are going to get further reduction to patak tau, and the others will just have talus tau. So, same places where these differences occur. We have Torah. For Torah, meaning law, we have Torah-thi, Torah-thaka, Torah-thi, Torah-tho, Torah-tha, Torah-thenu, Torah-chem, Torah-chem, Torah-tham, Torah-tham. Okay, the Torah-chem, Torah-chem is because, notice the patak now instead of the comment. So it's the same situation here. That one gets patak instead of comment because before the heavy suffixes, chem and chem. Those two, it reduces even further.
Wouldn't that show that Patak had a little lighter sound than common?
It probably did. And how to make a lighter sound, though,
that's
is the question.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That's the
I've heard some, you know, some books say to make an ah sound instead of ah. But ah is a very un-Hebrew sounding sound. They know they've done it purposely, you know, artificially to make a difference in the sound. That's one of the questions we'd like to ask Elias, I guess, when he comes. Is, do they presently make any difference? The Hebrew instructor that I had at the U didn't make any difference at all that I could hear. Now, maybe he could hear something I could, and that's what I'd like to ask him. Is there a slight shade of difference, and how should we even attempt to make a difference? Yes?
I understand what the Torah, well, that one.
Okay, Torah.
Yeah. How can be regarded as a light ending because you've obviously got a consonant for it.
You do, but the consonant isn't a part of the ending, it's part of the stem. So when we talk about heavy and light suffixes, we're dealing only with the suffix, the part that's added on itself. Does the part that's added on start with a consonant or a vowel?
Torah.
Right. We had Torah already, and then we put an O on it. But we're Torah Kem. You see, we had Torah, and then we put Kem on it. The thing we put on starts with a consonant, its own consonant. Now, admittedly, the syllable, Torah, so the syllable, the last syllable does start with tau, it's tau, kol, and wow. But the only part you added on was kol, and wow. The only part that was the suffix was kol, and wow. That made a new syllable, all right. And it merged with the consonant before it to make the new syllable. But the part that, technically the part that you added on as a suffix was the kol, and wow. And that started with a vowel in the word. In other words, real words can't do this, but you know what I mean? You can't do that. Can't have a word start out with whole and wow, you know. But you have to have a guttural something. But a suffix can. A suffix is kind of a grammatical entity. Right? So in other words, if you try to think of these suffixes as capable of standing independently, they can't. Kim and Tim is both good, but the other one's good. Okay. So, for example, in this Torah thumb, this third person masculine singular, what is the suffix there?
Comma's
name, yeah. Comma's name would be the suffix. Although, of course, nothing can begin with comma, you know. If the suffix, the part that was added on to the stem was comma's name. So, technically, that starts with a vowel, you know, comma. That's what they're talking about. But no word can start with a comma, you know. The comma's got to be stuck on something. Got to at least a guttural there for it to hang on to. You don't see commas just floating out of space, you know. All right. So that's the idea. Okay, then nouns with penultimate stress, like melek and na'ar, and certain other irregular types will be treated separately in later lessons, if you don't follow these nice rules.
It must be when they don't have an indefinite article. You can't have the commas floating around. I mean,
oh, yeah, right. Yeah. Indefinite
article. Some of the indicated in the original.
It's a stop. Okay, the following table includes most of the remaining common types of singular nouns illustrated with light and heavy suffixes. Be sure that the phonetic changes noted in the comments are clear. Well, I guess what the best thing to do is probably go through these, at least the first one in each section, or one typical one in each section, to show you what happens. And most of this is pretty much predictable and based on what we have now. But like he said, there are certain nouns that he's not even dealing with, segulus and a few other types. And we're going to find that we'll be dealing with some minor types in the next few, you know, chapters here and there. But there's a table, an appendix A, that has nouns and all different types of nouns and the pattern that they follow. And it'll give you what they look like in construct and what they look like with the light and with the heavy suffix. And so that's a handy chart to use, and I'll guarantee you now, you won't be able to remember all of these. You'll be using this chart a lot. So don't be ashamed if you have to use it a lot, because it's just not worth it to try to memorize what each noun does.
Even on tests?
Even on tests, yeah, except that it's in other words, if it's a very common word that we've all used a lot, that's what I expect you to know. If not, I may just give you, in parentheses, what happens, something like that. I'll try to do something like that for you. If it's one of these major types here, you know, that we're studying on this chapter, then I expect you to know what it does. But if it's one that you've never seen before or something, and I don't expect you to know, I'll tell you. Okay? Probably fair with you. Or, you know, almost have to make it open book sometimes. It seems like I give open book ones later on. Usually it doesn't make much difference whether it's open book or not. Surprisingly enough. Okay. Now, let's look at the categories here. First, monosyllabic noun. Yad, and with the light suffix is Yadi, and with a heavy suffix is Yad Kim. Now, comments is irregular. We would have expected Yad Kim. So, because it's Yad Kim, there's no way to predict that. In other words, your rule would have said, well, we've got Yadi, if we put a heavy suffix on it, that comment will reduce, you say, to Papa, just like Divar Kim. And so you would have guessed a path out there, but not as the goal. But it's the goal anyway. Okay, so that's just irregular. Ami, you get the doubling of the main. That's a bit unusual. So there's a stem change. There's been a stem change here. I think we've seen this before on these monosyllabic nouns. With any, the plural did the same thing. We had the doubling of the main. So, and then Amakim. Amakim. It's Amakim. Now, why is it vocal now?
Short
vowel. Yeah. Well, we got a short vowel, but that would
double
make it. But the dagesh makes it double. And that's what makes it vocal. Okay, amakem. And Kama just says to check the plural there, stem, and amim, the double name. That's the reason for the vocal shua there. Okay, and aim, meaning mother, I believe, in me, double name again. And imahem, again, the vocal schwa because of the double name. Shir for song, shiri, and shirakem. Why is that schwa vocal? Yeah, unchangeable long vowel before. Shir is unchangeable long vowel, so it doesn't close the syllable.
Kind of unusual. Reish takes it.
Yes, it'll take, Reish will take a schwa, right? It just doesn't take dagesh. That's the thing it can't take. Ration doesn't have a problem. It's the guttural from race that can't take dagesh, and it's the gutturals only that can't take shua. Okay. Ishi and Ishikam, same situation, unchangeable long vowel. In fact, about all the rest of these follow that pattern. Rosh, you might look at that. We've got a quiet all up there. Rosh, Roshi, Roshakem. Again, you have an unchangeable long vowel before in the poem. Sus, of course, we've already seen. Susakem. So, any questions on those, on that set? I suppose in that set, the only ones to really watch, those first three are the worst ones. Because Yaz has got the irregulars, the goal, and Am and Aim get a doubling of the main. The rest of them just are predictable.
In the
game,
mm-hmm. We haven't had that plural.
Yeah,
it's just the type of thing.
I'm almost certain. Yeah, so plural stem in most. Okay, yeah, it takes a double.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Do you know if that follows suit all the way through? I mean, if you have a plural.
Oh, yeah. I think so. If it's in the plural, it doubles. It'll double. What it does in the plural is what it does in the construct and suffix forms. I'm pretty sure that's the safe guideline. Okay, number two, nouns with aya and awa. We've looked at these already. And this isn't too bad because it does, what you basically do is just convert the construct form and then put the suffixes on the construct form. So if you remember to do that, you're fine. So remember, base, bias became base in the construct. And so the suffix form is basi and basakan for the heavy suffix. And again, the schwa is vocal because the unchangeable long vowel before it, terio. So all you do, and mawet becomes mot in the construct, so it's moti and motahen. So just think of it as turn it to construct first and put the suffix on this type. Okay, then disyllabic nouns, two syllables. We've got rikosh becomes rikoshi and rikosh. Rikoshakem. Again, because of the second syllable, what was that? Oh, Rikoshakem, excuse me. Thank you. Rikoshakem. I had to look at the next line. Rikoshakem. Okay. And it's Rikosh all along the line. Rikosh, Rikoshi, Rikoshakem. We have their vocal schwa again in the before the heavy suffix because of the unchangeable long vowel in front of it. Kalom, Kalomi, Kalomakem. Notice they're not putting the whole paradigm here because all of the light suffixes will be like kalomi, and all the only other heavy suffix, hen, would be just like what happens to Kabbalah with hen. Then Davar, Divari, and Divarkem, that's one we've already looked at. Zakain, the Zikaini, and Zikankem. Zikankem. Okay, what's happened in that one? This one, I guess you just had to remember. This is the one in the construct that had that second shortening. You expect there's going to be a shortening, but you may not know what to do with the seri there. Whether you shorten it, in the last syllable, that was a problem. Most of the seri didn't change at all. The syllable changed to patah. So most of them are just going to have the seri there, but this one goes to patah. I guess they just singled that one out and told you that's what happens to Zakim. Okay, that's what you can do. But the Khan Kim, of course, that shortens. So this shortens it, so it's silent Shua. Navi becomes Nivi'i, and just like the plural Nivi'im, proprotonic reduction. And Nivi'akam. Why do we have a reduced papak on that?
Can't take the Shua.
Yeah, can't take Shua. So you just put the reduced papak on it, right? Okay, Makom. Mikomi and Mikomchen. Again, unchangeable long vowel, so you have Kokoshua. Kokav, Kokavi, Kokavkem. There you had the comments reduced to Pathak again, so you close the syllable. Mishpat, Mishpati, Mishpat, Mishpatchen, Mishpatchen. Again, same thing, comments reduced to Pathak. Oyev, Oyev and Oyev Kim. And here we have interesting situation. This one's worth looking at. We had Oyev and then Oyev, the seri there reduced to Shua. This probably had the, this would be a pretonic reduction. And it's very much like the plural did. Thing that's interesting to me is that, well, if you follow construct rules, you wouldn't expect a change like that. Construct rule of the last syllable, if you have a theory in the last syllable, usually stays the same or sometimes reduced to papa. So, you kind of have to follow what the plural does on this one, or you be. And then it's, now what happens if you try to put the heavy suffix on that?
In Shua Shua.
Right. Yeah. You'd have two Shua's because you had a Shua on the Yod already, and now you would have had another Shua on the base, and because of the part of the suffix pattern, and you can't have two Shua's in a row, so the one before becomes here. So it's Oyev Kim, Oyev Kim, plural of Shua. This one's kind of unusual because to see that theory reduced to Shua is unusual, and probably why they're listing it out for you here. Sadiq, Sadiqi, Sadiq Kim, not too bad. Can't do too much with that. Okay. Then some of the nouns in A, Shana becomes Shinafi. Now notice what happens, you get the Kamas Tau instead of Kamas Pei. You make that change, then you add your suffix, and then you do your shortening, of course, just like you would with a plural. So it's Shinafi. And Shinaf Kem, and there you have the Pathak again. So these feminines are pretty regular all down the line. They're all going to do about the same thing. Eitza becomes Atsati, and of course you have to, couldn't put Shua on the ayin, that propionic reduction resulted in a Kata Pathak there. And Atsaf Kem, same thing there. Torah, Torati, Torah Kem. Bina, Binati, Binatkem, Kukta, Kukati, and Kukatkem. Givatkem, and Adama, Admati. This happens because of the I guess it's kind of like Oyev, but Oyev does. You get another shortening of the, and it's probably, well, it's a propertonic reduction to rule of Shua. So we have a propertonic reduction, so you would, and then with rule of Shua, you have to put a full count, a full pata. When you've had a guttural, the one before, instead of going to hear it, you go to the full vowel corresponding to the short vowel. So, admati, and then admatkem. Okay, Viracha, this becomes Birkati and Birkatem. Same thing, Rula Shua. Only it's here now because of the normal Rula Shua. Okay, Avodah becomes Avodati and Avodatem. Is there a question?
Yeah, why was the on Admatkem,
mm-hmm.
why was the Pasak under the Aleph instead of the very.
Oh, that's the same situation as with Admati. It's because of rule of Shua being applied to when there's a guttural. When there's a guttural, there's a Hata Hata instead of a Shua on that under the guttural. And so the rule of Shua for involving gutturals says that you go, instead of going to hear it, you go to the full vowel corresponding to the short vowel. So you get Hata, full Hata. Okay. Oh, we're looking at Adama. And the question is why is it Admati or Admatkem instead of Ismati or Ismatkem?
Mm-hmm.
It's because Rula Shua applied to a guttural results in the full vowel corresponding to the short vowel instead of hearing. So you can see the difference. The one just following it, Beraka, is what you normally expect, and then Admatkem. Consider those two as identical except for the difference in the rule of Shua. Okay. Avodah, well, I guess we did that one. Maybe we didn't. Avodah, Avodati, Avodatkem. Nothing really happens here because the unchangeable long second syllable. Tefillah becomes Tefillati and Tefillatkem. So those are pretty straightforward, pretty easy to deal with. Okay, well, it's not over yet. Because now we have what? That's with a singular noun. If you want to say my horse, you say to see. What if you wanted to say my horses? Plural. Now what you have to do is pluralize the noun and then also add a pronominal suffix. So we had a suffix for the plural, now we got to add a suffix to a suffix. And what happens is the suffixes amalgamate, as it were, and you come up with a different suffix, a different set of suffixes that are not unlike the ones we've seen, but these are the suffixes I mentioned to you before on all and L. These are the suffixes that are used now for plurals that are possessive, have pronominal possession. So the suffixes attached to the plural noun have the forms given in the preceding lesson for L and all. When a noun plural ends in im, these suffixes replace the plural ending. They should thus be thought of as a fusion of the plural ending and the pronominal element. So you can kind of think of it as a fusion of the plural ending, im, with the suffix, these other suffixes, and you get a new set of suffixes now. Now these set of suffixes tell you that it's plural as well as being having a pronominal suffix. So you see susai here, the first one, susai. Now that's in contrast to susi. Susi means my horse, susai means my horses. And you might recognize that I ending there, that's the same as Adonai. Adonai means literally, it's a plural majesty form. So it's my Lord, literally. But it's got that suffix for personal possession. So Susai, Suzeka, Susayek, Susau, Suzeha, Suzenu, Susehem, Susehen, Susehem, and Susehem. So there's your paradigm for sus. Now with Davar, we see something interesting. It's Divarai, Divarecha, Divarecha, excuse me, Divarayik, Divarau, Divarecha, excuse me, what's your pronunciation? Divarenu. And then we've got Divrehem and Divrehen, Divrehen, Divrehem, and Divrehen. Now what's happened there is we got a double reduction again in rule of Shua. In other words, that comments reduced all the way to Shua, and we had to have a rule of Shua to get the hirik in the first syllable on all four of those last forms. And the reason for that is they're disyllabic suffixes here, two syllables with unchangeable long in the first vowel, and that's resulted in a complete stress change. Now, the plural suffixes, and some of these other suffixes also had two syllables, but the stress was on the first syllable. So that didn't slide you down further, but now the stress is on the second of two syllables. So you've added two syllables, the second which has a stress. So, and you can't have everything's going to want to shorten up in front of that, and now even your second syllable in the word is in that position of proprietonic reduction. So let's look at the note here. Note the stress difference when the endings of the second person and third person plural are added. Here, a noun with two changeable vowels will undergo the double reduction met in the plural construct form. So this will be like the plural construct, getting this double reduction, again, because of adding these two syllables. So we reduce that second one, shawa, also. And we get divrehem, 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 divrehem. Yes?
So what was the reason that we get two reductions? That's how you do it? Or?
Yeah, I guess that's probably the bottom line, but there's a philosophy behind it. The reason that you get double reduction in these last four forms and not the previous ones is that you're adding a suffix that has two syllables, a-chem and a-chem. They got two syllables each. And the stress is on the last syllable, which means now you've added two syllables to a word, the last of which has a stress. So now the very last syllable in the word before it started is now in a proprietonic position. And with the other ones, that last syllable is just in a pretonic position, and that can go ahead and keep its vowel. You already did a proprietonic reduction. Now we've got to do a second proprietonic reduction, because we've added two syllables, the last of which has the vowel, has the stress, and we've shifted the stress over two places. So that means that we're going to try to reduce everything before that, and now we've got this comment in a proprietonic position. So normal rule of proprietonic reduction would be applied twice in a row, in effect, here. Once is because you're adding a suffix, and second is because you have the suffix you happen to add has two syllables, the last of which has the stress. So now you put the formally last syllable of the word in a proprietonic position. So we get another reduction again. Okay. And we saw this with the construct, that same reduction we saw in the construct plural form. So let's see if we can find a good example of this. Okay. With divarim in the construct, it was divre, remember. Same situation there. For a little bit different reasons, but the same kind of situation, you get the double reduction. In other words, what they do there is they in the construct, you are going to reduce any comments in an unstressed syllable to shua. And so that's what's going to happen over here now. You've got a comment in an unstressed syllable, and you just treat it like a construct. Shorten it down. Technically, of course, you still have it. The rules are not, they don't mix very well here because see, technically, if you go by the idea that any comment in a unstressed position gets reduced to shua, divarenu would do the same thing because that comment is in an unstressed position too. So you can't really follow that rule. So I guess maybe that's why he worded it double reduction. We had double reductions in the construct forms, and now we're getting a double reduction here, but for a slightly different reason. So here, because we've added a two-syllable suffix to the thing and shifted it down that far. It's kind of hard to try to straighten out all these. Sometimes the rules are kind of only made for our benefit. Sometimes the benefit, sometimes it's not a benefit anymore. Yeah, it's questionable. Yes.
So in that philosophy you were explaining, it really has to do with the way they like to pronounce the words.
Right. Yeah. That's what it all boils down to, is the way they like to pronounce words. They don't like to have, if you're going to have, see, they don't like something awkward, divar, ahem. They want to shorten, they don't like a word with a lot of syllables in it. So they like to shorten things down as much as they can. So divar, ahem is a lot easier to say than divar, ahem. And so that's the basic underlying philosophy behind it. And then, because you've added something with two syllables, that's going to put more stress on the word to shorten it. I guess is the way to think of it.
So, in our Indian example there, base and then the proprietonic position.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just having the the word's already changed. It's no longer the Varat. Now it's in a sense changed. It's no longer the olive of the comet.
Right. That already reduced. Yeah. Yeah. The word already reduced just by virtue of the fact that you're putting any suffixes on it at all. You're going to get proprotonic reduction to start with. And now because this particular suffix you've added has two syllables of a stress in the last, now you've got to shift it twice. So you've got a double register shift here, you might say. And now you've got the second syllable of the word in a proprotonic position. Earlier you just had the first syllable in a proprotonic position. Now you've got the second one also. So you get a double reduction. Now the reason why the other suffixes don't do that, even the ones that have the two syllables, is because of stress. Now, do note that, too, in these suffixes. For it's divarai, divareka. If the stress is not, it's not divareka, but divareka. And divarayek. Not divarayek, but divarayek. Note that stress difference, because that doesn't make a difference in the forms there. Divara, of course, only one syllable, so don't have to worry about that. And enu and deha, say the same thing. So do pay attention to that stress. Okay, well, we're out of time. We'll have to look at the squirrel tomorrow. Almost through it.
Oh, sure. Then the trial.
Now, then all we have to do is deal with all the exceptions.
Once we go through it, we go into it.
Yeah. As I said, this is about as bad as it gets.
It's like what Bernard gave up the choice to David, 7 years of family.
Do you want to study constructs, or do you want to study derived verbs, or...
David, let me not fall into the hand of man.
Mercy.